leave.
Oh, bitch, please, my ass. You want a sandwich?
Dig that. Oh, hell yeah.
She's a bad man, a gentleman. I'm a black man in a white world.
If I wasn't a Christian man, I'd probably be kicking in your ass.
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the JB's Low Tech Podcast. I'm sitting in my new comfy office chair in the Green Circle Studios in my man cave, and today's guest has a record that will never be broken and also is a voice of a nation, and we'll meet him when we come back here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
Well, folks, the season is finally here. What season? Baseball and softball season, of course. Are you ready? What about you players out there? Are you ready? Is your equipment ready? What about that glove you've been using? What about that uniform you've been wearing year after year? Well, I tell you what, if it needs to be repaired, bring it to JB's Glove Repair. He'll have you together in no time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair. With over 30 plus years of experience, he'll have you ready by game time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the JB's Low Tech Podcast. As I stated before, my guest has a record that will never be broken. And also, I can't even remember the other thing I said, Daryl. I'm sorry. But that's for right. Sure, you have a record that will never be... Oh, you're the voice of a nation. That was the other thing.
The nation.
Yeah.
The nation of what?
Of Gopher Nation.
Oh, I'm one of the voices. I wouldn't say that I'm the voice, but I think I'm one of the voices. I've been lucky enough to be able to analyze and be the color analyst for the University of Minnesota football team for a little over 20 years. So yeah, it's been seen a lot of great football.
Right. And the record I was speaking of is the rushing record at the University of Minnesota, because these days of throwing the football, what running back's ever going to get a chance to break your record?
You know, they got a young man there right now that has potential. I mean, I don't know if he'll break it or not, if he sticks around and all that too. I think that's the other thing, JB, is whether or not someone will stick around. So if a guy is going to get drafted, and we see that every day now, I mean, is he going to stay and be like, well, I'm going to play for the U or for, you know, whatever, you know, everyone's got a U in every state. So am I going to stick around here and play, or am I going to go to the NFL and make, you know, more money? So I think you have, you know, and I don't know if I would have stayed, you know, if it was 2021 and I was having a 1,000-yard season, you know, almost a 1,000-yard season, I'd probably be like, well, I'm going to probably go to the NFL. That's just kind of what people do.
Yes, it's what people do these days. So, Durrell was born in St. Louis, Missouri, but quickly moved to Rochester, Minnesota. But the reason why I bring up, there's twofold reason why I bring up where Durrell was born. Of course, I was born there, but I believe at least your dad went to Sumner High School with some of my older siblings. So,
oh, wow.
So, we actually have a connection before we ever knew each other. So, but yeah, you were born in St. Louis and then at age of one moved to Rochester, Minnesota. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So,
we moved to Rochester because my dad was an engineer. He was an IBM. He was a graduate with an engineering degree, and, he had an opportunity to come to Rochester. They had a minority recruitment program, and he thought that Rochester would be a better place to raise his family than St. Louis at that point. So he said, I'm going to take my family and go to Rochester. And, you know, I was just 1 year old, and my dad and my mom moved to Rochester, and it was sure challenging. I think sometimes he wishes he would have just, you know, kind of stayed and St. Louis, but it was a good opportunity. It was a job, so you know, so you move, and it worked out for us. We learned and we grew, and we had a good experience in Rochester growing up.
Now, if you said it was challenging, if you don't mind, what do you mean by challenging? And if you don't, if you're uncomfortable with that, we can.
No, I mean, I think the challenge of being, you know, we were there were blacks in Rochester,
right,
when we moved there, but there weren't very many. So I mean, you're moving into a town. My mom grew up in West Point, Mississippi.
Okay.
A very, very small town, actually Cedar Bluff, which is population 370 right now. So, you know, back in 1960, you know, when she was in high school, it was probably a population like 100. So it's a different time, you know, and my dad went down there in the summertime. So my dad's from St. Louis, Missouri, predominantly a black neighborhood, predominantly a black school that he went to. Went to historically black colleges. My mom went to Alcorn. My dad went to he went to Clark College. Actually went to Mary Holmes for a little bit, and actually finished up at Washington U at the in there. So played basketball in college. My mom played basketball in college. And you grow up, you know, around all people that look like you, and times were different back then. You know, my dad said to me, it's kind of interesting, I never ate out at a restaurant until I was 27 years old.
And
so,
I'm sorry, but I was just going to say, Durrell, I can believe that because my first restaurant was on my 16th birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. So a different time. You know, we think we are in the middle of like racial tension right now, but I wouldn't even, it was barely tension back then. Then it was just basically, it was stonewalled. It's like,
right.
And you aren't eating in this restaurant because you are black. And I got uncles that say, hey, you know, we have one uncle that moved out of Mississippi because he, very similar to Matilda, like looked at a white woman and these people said, we're going to come kill you tonight. So they moved in the middle of that. He moved to Chicago. So, I mean, so those are like, just like regular, like occurrences, just like, hey, you know, I got a new car on Tuesday. It's like, well, no, I had to move because, you know, I looked at a woman, these three white guys threatened me. So we decided to move him to Chicago in the middle of the night. So I have one uncle that moved to Chicago in the middle of the night because of that. So, I mean, we're talking about, it's just a different time. So to come to Rochester, all white people, you know, still like the race and the tension, being, you know, an African-American man, an African-American woman, black, in, you know, 1970 would have been, or 1970 when they moved to Rochester. Very challenging.
That is very challenging. And again, we have something in common. My father's father was chased out of Little Rock, Arkansas, because a white individual decided to attack him because he was wearing a nice suit. And my grandfather gave him whatnot, and the when the authorities came and knocking, the ultimatum was either leave town or we're going to kill you. Have we come a long way in a lot of ways? Yes. But do we have a long way to go? Yeah, we do. So you grow up in Rochester and you become a football star. And were there any other sports in high school and youth?
Yeah, well, both of my parents played basketball. So I was, that was, football was just something we played. Basketball was kind of a, maybe a tiny bit more of a priority. And then we, my dad was a track person. So I ran track, and my siblings ran track, and my sister and my brother, they both went to state and track. I went to state and track, and actually went to state in basketball as well. But football was the one that got me more big time recruiters. Like people would come, I'd get some letters from track, from some people down south. I got a few letters, and a few letters for basketball. But I was, you know, a 6'1" power forward, and that's like, you know, just you can turn a TV on. I'm like, well, that's probably not really like gonna get me anywhere, you know. But the letters for football were coming from almost everyone. It was like embarrassing to say where they came from. Almost everyone. So I was like, okay, well, and it was flattering. I'm like, okay, so every day the mailbox had tons of game programs, and they would send, like,
right.
Back then in the 80s, they would send like their whole, like, their media guide. Yeah. So every day, like, media guides, like two or three media guides would be in my mailbox with a letter from, like, the coach and, like, the recruiting coordinator. And I was the running back coach or whatever, and maybe some handwritten notes and stuff like that. So that was recruiting back then. And then just people showing up at your school, you know, coaches then didn't, there weren't quite as many rules. So coaches would just, basically just show up at school, which was almost funny because my friends were like, man, you're like, you get called out of class like almost every day. Like, so
yeah, I remember those days when college recruiters would show up and somebody'd make the announcement over the loudspeaker, such and such, please report to the principal's office, and everybody go, oh, what did he do? And then you find out later that coach from, you know, the University of Minnesota was there, or the coach from Arkansas was there, or the coach from Oklahoma was there. And it was like, yeah, I get it. And actually, that happened to me. The coach from Colorado who then came to the University of Minnesota, Bill Happel, pulled me out of class one time because he wanted to recruit me and a football player, me as a student trainer and him as a football player. So,
well, that's smart, actually. It's, yeah, a package deal is always works better. Love friendships and relationships when you got a buddy from high school where you know walk to school and done all those things together. Those package deals work.
Yeah, unfortunately for him, all he got was me. So, but when you signed and you came, I remembered an old equipment manager was the happiest man in the world. Dick Manson was in love with you before you ever stepped on campus.
Now, Matt's is and was a great man, had extremely strong opinions. He's, yes, like, he's kind of part of, not quite Sid Hartman level, but he's part of the University of Minnesota folklore. I mean, you think about Sid Hartman's kind of part of Minnesota, and then you have Matt's as like part of the University of Minnesota folklore, just the people, the stories, his passionate speeches, his all the time he spent talking to student athletes about, you know, hey, you know, you need to do right. You need to, you know, think about what you're doing. You need to have some pride. And he was much, much more than an equipment man, far more than, much more than, yeah, much like yourself.
Well, I don't know about that. I appreciate that comment about me, but yes, Dick Manson was, he was a mentor. He was a confidant. You know, many a time I saw him speaking to an athlete to the side, you know, not only football, but baseball, track, you know, female athletes. And they all felt comfortable crying on his shoulder and then walking away with a smile and being able to continue their athletic endeavors at the University of Minnesota. So then you are drafted into, and you know, we just spent the, and still in the draft weekend, you got drafted to the NFL. Can you speak a little bit about how that process was for you?
You know, it's a lot different than it is now. You know, the process now, I mean, we had teams that came in and worked out, and, you know, guys go to work out with people to get ready for the combine, and we just got ready on our own. You know, we had, like, you know, our friends were there the year before, and we would talk to them and be like, what drills should I work on? What cones should I work on? And obviously you got to work on catching and running and hitting your 40-yard dash. And, but it's kind of, it's an anxious time, you know, and I still excited by the draft. I watch the draft from not quite the beginning then, but I watch it, you know, every year, and I like it. Actually, it's fun for me to see and make my own little predictions. But it was different, but it's also just anxious. And then you get drafted, and then you got to be like, okay, now it's time to, you know, perform. And you get there, and it's always an awakening for anyone. I mean, you never face that level of competition in practice in college. So to come to practice and have, you know, someone who's been in NFL anywhere from, you know, 1 or 2 years to sometimes, you know, guys have played 8, 10, 12 years. You're like, wow. And this guy's mastered his craft, his footwork, his hand placement, and athletic ability has almost nothing to do with, because you're not there if you're not an athlete. So there's a lot of things that go into it to, but you know, it's also a blessing, and you get to play. I mean, I got to play was my rookie year. We played against the 49ers, and I couldn't believe I was playing against Joe Montana and Jerry Rice and, you know, Ronnie Lott and all these people that I grew up watching, you know, like, and then, you know, it's such an acceleration from when you're, you know, 16 or 17 and you're kind of in your basement watching, you know, Sunday football and Saturday football. So you're out there on Saturday, which kind of comes fast. And then Sunday is a tremendous acceleration because you're like, oh my God, there's, you know, what, you know, Joe Montana, you know, Tommy Kramer, you know, all these people that I was like, okay, so it's just, it's an incredible, incredible experience.
So we're, how many years did you play in the NFL?
5 years. Oh. 5 years, yeah.
Yeah. So you beat the lifespan, which is 3 years.
Yeah, somehow I survived that. You need to have, you need to be, you know, obviously lucky and blessed to get in the NFL, and then you need to be in the right situation. You know, sometimes you just get in the situation. I remember talking to DJ Dozier when he was at the Vikings, and I met him at something project we were working on together. And I remember watching him in college, and, you know, running backs can speak to running backs about, like, sight and vision, right, and what you're doing. And I just noticed he wasn't himself. And I just kind of asked him about it, you know, because he said, oh, you'll understand one day. And then when I got to NFL, I understood if the team doesn't allow you to do what you do and how you got to NFL, then you'll become a regular NFL player versus being a successful NFL player. And that's what happened to him. It's a little bit of what happened to me, you know. So you just kind of, you do the best you can, and you'll do, like, anything to have a job. You know, it's not like it's a job that is easy to come by, where you can, you know, make really good money and have fun doing it. But it's a challenge, but it still is an awesome experience that I wouldn't trade for anything.
I did jump ahead a little bit too soon. How were your days at the University of Minnesota?
Well, they were great. They were fun. You know, I was also blessed. You know, I came into a situation where they did let me do what I did. You know, they're like, we notice you're a downhill running back. We're going to pitch you the ball. They even wrinkled the offense a little bit after Ricky left. They said, we're just going to make you a straight up I back. We're not going to have you run in the option and wait for someone to pitch you the ball. We're going to, you know, have an extra blocker. We have a tight end. You know, going to do a little bit more play action and let you, you know, really run the ball. Although when Ricky left, it was tough because so much pressure was, you know, put on me in the beginning. We had, you know, some young quarterbacks that just were inexperienced. So it took a little while for us to kind of, you know, move on from the Ricky Foggy era, because he was such a phenomenal, phenomenal quarterback, decision maker, and his run pass threat, which is incredible. He would be incredible right now with the, yes, the RPO, the run pass option game. Mm-hmm. So I just say, you know, him being able to, I'm going to run it, I'm going to throw it. He'd also be able to play in the NFL, I mean, he didn't get a chance to play in NFL basically because he was a black running quarterback. That just was not in vogue in the 80s in the NFL. So he says, well, you know, he played basically 100 years between the CFL and the Arena Football League. But back then it was just a different. They wanted a guy to stand in the pocket and throw the ball around. And they wanted people really running around until Randall Cunningham came along. Randall Cunningham came along like, you know, actually, I think we do want a guy who's mobile.
Right.
You know, that puts a lot more pressure on the defense, you know. And right. Ricky Foggy was mobile. He would have been just fine. I'm not saying he's Randall Cunningham, but he probably could have been, you know, half a Randall Cunningham, and that would be pretty damn good.
Yeah, well, we had some winning seasons under you and Ricky, so because you guys were dual threat and put a lot of pressure on. My favorite thing, because I'm a little bit older than you guys, and I moved on from football at one point, and moved over to the Bierman side, but to watch Ricky pitch the ball behind his back. And he would do it every once in a while in practice, but he would dare not do it in a game. And I always wanted to see him do it in a game, you know, like a behind-the-back basketball pass. You know,
we should have.
He would freeze the DN and or outside linebacker in practice when mm-hmm. they came and they squared up, and he would, like, stop, freeze, and then pitch the ball behind his back, and they were just mesmerized. And I was like, ah, we could just get him to do that one time. It would be great.
But, yeah. Well, you know, there's always a little bit more of a handcuff on the players in the 80s and 90s than there is now. I think now the coach would be like, you know what? After you practice that enough, you know, you look at the and it was interesting because my wife was watching some football stuff because I basically force her all the time. So real soon she's got to watch some extra football. And she's like, why are those guys practicing throwing the ball like sidearm and like running sideways? And I said, they're teaching off platform throws now because right. they're so popular. So it's not. So, you know, you have Aaron Rodgers and you have Patrick Mahomes and you have Russell Wilson and you have these guys that throw the ball off platform or not like off platform, meaning like not from the traditional quarterback.
Right.
Stand up straight, just throw the ball on the hash, throw the ball on the sideline, throw the ball on the boundary. It's like, no, we need to practice these situations so that you're ready to accurately throw the ball when you're off balance. It makes it for, you know, much, much more accurate during the game. And guys have basically mastered it, you know?
Yeah, and especially it's helped some people like Russell Wilson, the quarterback with the Arizona Cardinals, and a few others who were ex-baseball players.
Yeah, very
and,
true.
And, you know, shortstops and third basemen, and they learn all the different throwing angles and arm slots, as they call it. And then when they move it on to playing football, they still have that DNA and can make those throws that way. Also, the quarterback for the Chiefs, he was a former baseball player also. You know, his dad, Patrick Mahomes, one, was a pitcher. So it was, you know.
Well, you probably remember Pat because yes. he worked out at the university. That was he became a friend through actually Ricky Foggy and I, and he, and actually Ricky was closer to him in the beginning, and then we all became friends, and Pat would play basketball with us a lot downtown at the I don't remember what it was called even back then, Arena Club or something like that. But we used to mm-hmm. play basketball with Pat and myself and Rick and Marquette Fleetwood and actually Hawkins. He was down there. LaTroy played. Erickson played with us sometimes too. He was a good guy, big good shooting, athletic dude. He was a good guy too. So yeah, it was. Yeah, he became a friend, so it's been fun to watch Patrick, actually, because I kind of watched him at Texas Tech because I remembered Pat and hanging out with him a little bit downtown and running around a little bit. And then, quite honestly, I thought I watched his son, Patrick, in college. I said, oh, he's good. Mm-hmm. I think he's a good quarterback. I said, you know, I think he could play in the NFL. You know, just my little snap analysis from watching, you know, some games, you know, in my basement or whatever. I'm like, he can play. I didn't think he was going to be literally like the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Right.
You know, it's basically he is, you know, he's like, you know, he's Super Bowl champion. He's smooth. He's, you know, it is a blessing to have a professional father and having been around all those different folks for all that time. But it's been fun to watch him.
Well, the old saying was the only person that keep Michael Jordan under 20 was Dean Smith. I think the only person that kept Patrick Mahomes off the front page of college football news was his coaching system down at Texas Tech. So,
yeah.
You know, he was probably a little held back by the system that, even though they ran a very explosive offense down there, I think they still kind of held him back some, just to keep him a little under control. But you see everything he does.
He didn't. He also didn't have the compliment. I mean, the NFL is different, and it's much more it's much more open. And he did a lot there. I mean, it just wasn't his team. They actually just weren't a great college team. I mean, he did a lot, but he didn't have I can't even remember the receiver, Tariq Hill, I think, the guy that runs, 100 miles per hour. And he didn't have that type of ammunition around him. And to Andy's credit and to the scouts' credit, because I talk to the scouts sometimes on a broadcast, they're kind of like, they thought this little knock-kneed kid that came in there, they said, I don't know about this. But, he's obviously he's proven to be really, and they put, you got to have people around him. That's kind of, I think it's part of Aaron Rodgers, kind of his little rub against the Packers right now. Like, can't just be like just drafting random people. We're trying to go, and Aaron Rodgers has, I estimate, a good 5 years in it, and probably don't need to draft his replacement while the guy's basically not really been hurt, other than, when Anthony Barr fell on him and broke his collarbone or something like that. So.
Right.
It's just, you got to have people around you. And, Texas Tech just isn't like a known football program,
right.
So, they might have maybe a little bit, but also just kind of pieces and parts, but also tremendous recognition by the Kansas City Chiefs and Andy Reid. And quite honestly, even the grooming process with Alex Smith, they're like, hey, we're not going to just run him out there right away and just say, hey, make it happen. It's like, no, actually, let's watch some film. Let's slow it down. Let's run the scout team. Running a scout team in the NFL is no joke. You're not playing against guys that are, that are the third string and fourth string. You're playing against basically the second string, some first string guys, and guys that are, that know what the heck they're doing out there. So, they did a really good job with him.
Well, we've talked about your years at the U, and we got you into the pros, and, you said that was a learning experience that I would assume that you would never trade. And then you move on from there. And then you how did you become one of the voices of Gopher football?
Oh, man, that's a good question. It was I think Paul Flatley had just got tired of coming back and forth. He wasn't living here anymore.
Okay.
And Glenn Mason and the coaching staff, I got done playing, and I was coming to practice once in a while and watching, and wasn't exactly sure what I was going to do. And even in my career, I wasn't that involved in Boulder Options or anything yet. So I was kind of like hanging around, working out, doing stuff. And they needed a basically, I started out on the sideline because they had Dave Mona and Ray Christensen. And then there was a game where it was raining, and Ray Christensen said, I never worked with a sideline guy, and he wasn't using me very much. He wasn't sending it to me very much. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, I wasn't that skilled. I was just like, hey, I just kind of say something. I say, all right, back up to you guys in the booth. And he said, just stay here. So I stayed in the booth, and I started interjecting myself during the game every once in a while. And I felt like, this is like everything all the coaches said to me started like kind of coming back to me. And like my experiences being in the huddle and the experience sitting in the film room and my offensive coordinators and defensive people and my friends and locker room talk, all these things started to jostle around in my head. And I started talking about the defense and the leverage and the quarterback and the reads and the running back and kickoff return guys and stuff like that. And I was like, this is much, much more my game than being on the sideline and trying to, catch the coach and ask him about halftime adjustments and things like that. So Ray said, why don't you just stay here? So then I've been in the booth since Ray Christensen said that I should stay in the booth. And I think it was like around 1998 or something like that. I'm not exactly sure. Somewhere in there.
Well, you give an insight that most people will never get, which is a person who's, like you said, been in the huddles, been in the film rooms, and talked to coaches. And, you know, till this day, you probably still go to practice and get to see things and talk to coaches. And that's an insight that you share with the listeners, which is something that's really great for the listener. I don't know what your plans are, but you're definitely well respected and well loved in the University of Minnesota community.
It's fun, JB, and it does give me a connection to football. And quite honestly, I mean, I love football, and I was kidding. A friend of mine goes, "Hey, did you see the draft the other day, Rashad Bateman?" And I was like, "Did I see the draft?" It's like asking, like I said, I think I have a minor, and saying minor is probably an exaggeration, a minor addiction to football. So I said, "Yeah, did I watch the draft?" I said, "I watch football games, and my wife falls asleep. I'm happy that she fell asleep so I can turn over to turn the television channel and watch the West Coast games that are playing right. Like 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night." So yeah, I watched the draft I'm into it. So it's a good thing, and being the broadcaster is probably close enough for me. I mean, coaching is and I've coached my kids and I've coached some other kids. That's I enjoy that, but the moving around of being a college or professional coach are just not in my wheelhouse.
Okay. That was going to be one of my questions, but you're watching college football and you're watching the draft and you see that your position has been devalued. But you see the overhyping of quarterbacks, because I think teams are damaging themselves by chasing prospects at that position that only hit at a 30% or less rate in the league. You know,
yeah.
I get it that when you hit on one like a Patrick Mahomes, you know, you're set for 10 to 15 years, but the amount of progress that is lost for a team, you know, taking a chance just befuddles me.
That's a good point, JB. I also think that they've also changed the NFL has made it less dangerous to do that, because it used to be if you hitched your wagon to someone, they were going to get like this just ginormous, the top 10 picks got more money than guys who had been playing in the league like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, 10 years. They're like, no, we got to make it. We want them to get a healthy wage. You know, it's far, far more than college. You're making really, really good money. But you can't have a team just lose their whole ass on drafting someone in the top 10 as a quarterback or as a running back or as a receiver. But so the NFL has realized that and made so that you can have a little bit a healthier cost structure into the rookie contract, so you don't get totally crushed if a guy doesn't work out and you're not paying him, you know, $14 million or $15 million a year and he's terrible or a bad person or just doesn't work out, so, or injured. You know, any one of those three things can happen and that can set an organization back. So, but the quarterback position is, you know, one of the most important positions, if not, because you're always looking for him. But I'm kind of always comes back to me as like watching the draft, and of course I watch the Vikings, I watch the Packers, and I watch a lot of NFL. You got to have an offensive line. You know, right. It's kind of what it always yes. kind of comes down to. When you have an offensive line that's successful, average to average quarterbacks become good quarterbacks, and same with the running backs and receivers and everything else, because they can manage it. And you hope that, you know, you got to keep drafting a quarterback, because that's what you have to do, because we're always looking for that next one. You hope you get the next, you know, Fran Tarkenton or, you know, whatever, Mahomes or Tom Brady or any of those things. And you just have to kind of patiently kind of keep them on your roster and hope that you spawn that next one.
Yeah, because, you know, if you hit a good one, you got 5 years at a very controllable salary, and then you're able to build around them.
Yeah. But well, and then it's worth it, though. I mean, right now, like, just in, hypothetically, if the Minnesota Vikings could have, you know, Russell Wilson, is it worth, you know, what? I don't even know what the salary would be.
Right.
$18 million or whatever. I say, oh, yeah, well, it is, actually. I mean, whatever they're paying Kirk Cousins, if mm-hmm. they could just switch Kirk and say, I got Russell Wilson, be like, oh, we'll do that. And they will say that inside the bill, oh, well, never, we love Kirk. So, you know what? I'm just saying, if you could. It's
yeah. Well, the for me, the other thing with all the quarterback talk and with the media is, it, and I'm just going to say it, it's just laziness. It's the one position everybody can, you know, the novice football fan to the expert football fan can understand is the quarterback, you know, position. They can't understand the offensive line, defensive line. They can't understand, unless it's a pass rusher, they can't really understand what the linebacker play is doing and whatnot, but they can all understand the quarterback play to a point. And so everybody concentrates their energy on that. And for me, it's just laziness. But then I also have a 22-year background of being around college football coaches. Yeah. So it's a little bit different for me. Durrell has a spring game to do later today, and I hate to do this to him, but I got to pay the bills. And it's just a one-minute hit here, Durrell. So if I can squeeze this in and get the bills paid, I'd appreciate it. And then we'll come back and finish up.
Sounds good.
All right. So my guest again is Durrell Thompson, the voice of one of the voices. He's going to get mad at me. And I know your partner, and because he's actually from St. Louis, too.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Yeah. So he would get mad at me. So Durrell is one of the voices of Gopher Football Saturdays. And we'll be right back here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
When you need someone to listen, a lawyer you know and trust.
Congratulations to all the Minnesota businesses that scraped through the last year. It sure hasn't been easy, but we've done it together. And while we certainly need to move forward, it's good to reflect on what we've been through and the many losses. Here at Bradshaw & Bryant, we held a lot of Zoom meetings, increased our phone calls, and have done our best to keep up with all the changes while continuing to provide quality work. We'd like to thank everyone that turned to us with their personal injury and criminal needs, as well as the courtrooms for bringing the community back together to serve justice. We look forward to being part of Minnesota's growth and success for many years to come. I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. I hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, don't sign anything till you've talked to us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
Seeking justice for the injured, Bradshaw & Bryant.
Children, oh yeah, my wife, they killed my wife, and most of all, they stole my last Clint Eastwood movie.
Welcome back here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast. Today's guest is Durrell Thompson, all-time leading rusher here at the University of Minnesota, and Durrell's a longtime friend of mine, and both of our paths started in St. Louis. His only lasted a year. My lasted 18, but we both got out. So my siblings who still live there are going to be mad that I actually said that. But so you get through the whole NFL grind. You're working at the University of Minnesota. You married. You start raising children. And I'm only saying this in a teasingly way. Your children don't go to the University of Minnesota.
Oh, I have one that did. He actually graduated. He got
Oh, great.
Yeah, he got his master's degree, and he walked on the football team. He's a receiver.
Okay.
So and there, you know, as you know, we had a gentleman drafted 2 days ago. They right. are loaded at the receiver position. So he never got an opportunity to really get on the field. So actually, for his senior year, he's transferring down to Mankato. True is his name, True Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we're excited and proud for him. So he actually ended up, and he really had a good experience with Coach Fleck and the staff and everything else. They were just loaded between Tyler Johnson and Demetrius Douglas and Rashad Bateman and Chris Ottman Bell. There was not a lot of opportunity for him to just, you know, crack into the lineup, because they had him, they recruited him, they gave him scholarships, so that was just kind of part of the deal. But he had a good experience, and he's going to go down to Mankato and hopefully have an opportunity down there. And so, but you're right. Other than that, I have not had anyone that I have a Badger, I have an Aztec,
yeah,
I got a freaking I got a Hoosier, and I'm married to a Hawkeye, okay, so right. we got all kinds of internal wrestling matches, and we're trying to get. I'm trying to. I told my wife, I said, the ultimate Christmas picture is when everybody wears their stuff from their school. I said, yes. we got to get organized and get our Aztec and our Hawkeye and our Gopher and our Hoosiers and everyone in their stuff for a Christmas picture. Hopefully within the next year or so. And so that'll be a little bit more fun. You know, I guess if people are still mailing or emailing out Christmas cards, we'll have to get that organized.
Well, I only kid because I totally understand that. My son went to UMD, University of Minnesota Duluth, and I learned through the back channels that he didn't want to go to the U because he thought I was going to control his life, which is laughable, because the day I would have dropped him off at the dorms, it would have been the same reaction when I dropped him off at UMD. I danced. So he would have bothered me more than I ever would have bothered him on the campus, yeah, if that would have happened.
I think I heard the same thing from our oldest daughter. She's like, I would have been, it would have been convenient for you to come home, and it would have been nice for us to watch games every once in a while. But I said, I didn't have any, you know, desire to really be like up in your business, you
right.
know, no more than I was in your business when I said, I barely went in your bedroom when you were growing up. I said, I'm not going to come to your room. I said, we will come out, we'll talk, we'll laugh, we'll eat.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but, you know, it's good, you know, and that's part of it, JB. It's just still good for kids to, you know, make their own decisions and to feel good about it. Because, you know, if they did go and you're saying, you should really be a gopher. And he's like, okay, you know, and then he twists his ankle and he's like, man, I never really wanted to be here anyway. You know, it's like,
right.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But you should be something else. You know, so yep. You should be a Badger, a freaking Bulldog, or, you know, whatever else you should be.
Yeah, and I have my adopted daughter is now finishing up her junior year down at FAM University, Florida A&M University.
Right on, yeah.
And she actually did want to be a gopher. She has the type of story you have. She was born here in Minnesota and was raised in St. Louis, because my ex-wife moved back to St. Louis, and she was raised in St. Louis. So, and she actually wanted to go to school here, did not. Unfortunately, if she would have just applied for the College of Liberal Arts, she would be a gopher. But she tried to get into the School of Biological Science and just did not have the high enough ACT scores to get in. She had very good scores, and her GPA was very good, but she just didn't get in, so... But she's down.
That's a very, very competitive. I mean, you got to be probably high 30s, which is like doubling my ACT score. So I can't even fathom, you know. I mean, people are coming from all over the world. So,
right. But, yeah, she was a 3.9 GPA and a 27 score in the ACT. She went to a... special magnet school in St. Louis, and there's class as a whole, their average score was 29 on the ACT. So yeah, there were some bright kids coming out of that school. But she's doing well, she's happy, so that's all that counts. So
that's very true.
You're raising kids, you're broadcasting, and all of a sudden you figured, as John Anderson would say, you got to do something with the next 50 years of your life besides broadcasting. And that you are a part of an organization called Boulder Options. Can you let the listeners know a little bit about Boulder Options?
Yeah, we are a health and wellness-based mentoring program. We're going into our 28th year as an organization. I've been with the organization for 26 years. And our goal is to introduce kids to a healthy lifestyle through running, biking, tutoring, and homework. And we work with young ladies and young men, 10 to 14 years old, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester. And we have a staff of about 14 people. And we'll engage, you know, in a normal year, anywhere from, you know, 3,500 to 4,500 kids between our one-on-one mentoring program. We get probably 100, a little more new kids per year. We have an alumni program with about 500 or 600 kids in it.
Wow, that's and then great. Speaking,
and we speak to kids too. So we'll speak, you know, about health, goal setting, anger management, nutrition, bullying, and different types of topics. If they ask for myself or one of my coworkers, come up and speak in at a school or at a community center.
Well, that's great. But within this, what has been the challenges in this last year and a half with COVID and also the civil unrest and protesting and whatnot? What were the challenges of reaching that type of clientele?
Well, let's start with COVID for me and Boulder Options. I mean, I think the COVID, the shelter in place, and we forget sometimes that schools a lot of times have breakfast and always have lunch and sometimes have what they'll call a snack as a kind of a covert way to send food home with kids.
Right.
And not having that, a lot of our families had a tough time with food. So we started things we just don't normally do. So we started working with our families to help them identify where they could get food and get resources and actually sometimes have been raising money to basically send them gift cards and coupons so they could go get food on their own and do those things. And then the other piece of the pandemic that we're all, you know, most people have a little bit of space in their house. And sometimes our families are a little bit more condensed. You know, you're living in a, you know, maybe a one or two bedroom apartment and not having some of the technology. So helping our families with iPads as far as maybe letting them use them or borrow them. And then headphones became a really big deal and internet access. And then our lack of connectivity. We really worked hard to make sure we still connected with our kids and with our mentors and our families to be able to. And it's all, like everyone, we moved to a virtual platform, so it's a video conversation or a video meeting. And then we were really glad we could finally get together in person. You know, last summer was when we started to do some activities, you know, outside with masks and all that good stuff together. But so really, really just being able to pivot, and I was really proud of my coworkers. Say, you know what, Daryl, we got an idea. And I'm like, okay, so what do you think? I was like, we're going to do this online. We're going to broadcast it over Facebook, and we're going to help our kids get these tablets. And we want to do a food drive. I'm like, okay, because we have to do something. We can't just sit here and say, well, we're just going to, you know, sit here and twiddle our thumbs. And the community stepped up, because I was nervous that we were like, how are we going to make payroll every, 2 weeks when we can't go anywhere, we can't do anything. But the Minnesota and actually people around the country stepped up and said, you know what, we need to support, you know, organizations like ours. And then that we have the George Floyd situation,
right?
Or the murder of mm-hmm. George Floyd, and then angry people and how do mentors communicate with their kids about that. So we talk about that. We also have the trial, and then we have the, which is kind of jumping ahead. I mean, go back again to the civil unrest of what's going on in the city. And our kids live in South Minneapolis. Our kids live in North Minneapolis. So I'm hearing firsthand what's going on. It was interesting. I was talking to one kid. He goes, Daryl, this isn't even us. He goes, I don't know who these people are. He said, there's cars out in the alley. So yeah. There's cars out in the alley with plates from not every, but border states.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just leave it down. I'm not going to name the states. I said they're border states, and they're hiding gas cans, and they're hiding little like pop bottles and all these other things. And then they come back and goes, and they're like jockeying background out here, and they're like, they're shooting guns. I said, I said, why would I burn down the Cub Foods? It's right up the street. I go down there and get milk and chips. That's what one kid said. I need my milk and chips. I'm like, he just cared about his milk and chips. He didn't care about everything else. I was like, well, you're right. And I don't know, so.
And that was the thing. I couldn't get people to wrap their arms around that most of the people doing the damage was not people from those neighborhoods, but it was those neighborhoods that paid the price. I started calling it an assassination of a neighborhood because that's exactly what it came down to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It is interesting, and you think about the neighborhoods that got where it was torn down. It was minority neighborhoods. They're like, oh, right. Here's a chance to destroy.
Yes.
You know, Broadway. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you come in like, who's going to destroy Broadway? Well, these people, like, here's a chance to take a shot at them. You roll in, you destroy, you leave.
Right.
That's and it. It wasn't in the same thing on Lake Street. You roll in, you destroy, you leave. You
know, yeah. It's not, and they destroyed it not because they were angry. They destroyed it because they knew they now had an opening to put that neighborhood back by, you know, 10 years or so.
Yeah.
You know, they came to do damage and to leave those people stranded and wanting and whatnot. Now, I do appreciate the major corporations like Target who have stepped up and rebuilt quickly and done things like that. But that was done purposely. And again, that's why I call it an assassination of a neighborhood, because they were out to do that, to leave those people stranded, because they take away their food and their clothing and their protection and whatnot. You leave them stranded and hungry and desperate, and God knows what happens next.
Yeah. Yeah. You just fired and run right across the bow. And it was a painful one for the community.
Well, it was great to hear that you guys were able to rally and do things for those kids as you did, because we all know that those things needed to have happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very important. Very, very important. It's a big part of my life. You know, I learned that from my parents. My mom and dad, even when they separated and divorced when I was about 5 years old, but there was always, not always, but often kids at my dad's house, and there was often kids at my mom's house, you know, that weren't ours. And they were always very, very involved in the community. And my dad has probably mentored over 40 or 50 young men in his lifetime. And some come up to me like, hey, I just really want to thank you for everything your dad did for me. And I'm like, what? And I don't know. You know, I'm like, at an event or something, I'm like, okay, that's really, 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 man, I really want to thank you for what your pops did. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. He said, we sat on the step and talked when I was like, you know, like 14 years old in Rochester. I live here in the Twin Cities. And he kind of, you know, went on and on about the time. And my dad just listened to him. So very, very proud of what he did. And I try to carry on his tradition and my mom's tradition.
Well, that's a great legacy there, Daryl. In the last final minutes here, because I made a promise to you and I'm going to keep it, because I got to get you to the spring game. It's not a spring game without Daryl Thompson being there, and you'll get to see the other alumnus and players and whatnot. I won't be there. I have other things to do, and I'm going to be honest with you. Plus, I feel a little ostracized right now. So, what are you looking forward to today at the spring game?
Well, quite honestly, seeing some football. You know, I think that's one of the hard things. I've not seen hardly any. Last year, we didn't really have anything, you know, because of COVID. And this year, I've not been to. I went to one practice and ended up being. Practice got canceled because everything was going so well. So with Coach Lex, so I'm looking forward to seeing some football and trying to just get a little gauge on, you know, what the team's going to look like, you know, what the running back core is going to look like, hopefully how the backup situation with the quarterback is. And then defensively, I think there's a lot of opportunity, you know, back there. So it'll be interesting to see just kind of who's out there, what they do, and what's going on. So just some actual live football, a little bit of evaluation, and then, you know, hopefully everybody obviously makes it through the game healthy as well. So,
well, I'm definitely going to have you back before the season starts, because we didn't talk about things like name, image, and likeness, the transfer portal, and all those different things. But the highlight of today's spring game is supposedly Lindsey Whalen, Gopher great, all-time women's basketball player, and Ben Johnson, who's also a Gopher basketball player and now the head coach of the men's team, they're both the coaches of our men's and women's teams, are supposedly the head coaches of the two teams that are being split up today for today's scrimmage. So
yeah, and I heard last night, and I know this podcast won't go out probably before the game, so I'm going to just spoil it, is there's a shootout before the game between them to see, like, that's not a coin toss.
Right.
It's a shootout before the game. Like, I don't know, they're going to bring out, like, a hoop or something. They're going to have, like, a little horse game, or I don't know what it is, but Mike was telling me about it last night, so I'll see here in about an hour and a half, because we go on the air at 11. So,
right. Well, yeah. And my money would be on Lindsay, by the way. So
She's pretty good. She's a pretty good shooter.
Right.
Although she was a point guard, so it wasn't always just shooting. She was it'll be a close match. I don't think either of them were shooting was totally their deal, but we'll see.
Well, like I said, Durrell, I'm going to keep my promise and get you out of here, get you on your way so you can report on that. I appreciate your time today, and definitely will have you back before the Gopher football season kicks off and we can get into all those other stuff plus the season. I appreciate your friendship. I appreciate your what you do for the community and everything else you bring to us and to me personally.
I appreciate you, JB, and you should not feel ostracized by anything. The University of Minnesota and the student athletes, and I'm going to just speak on behalf of all of them, appreciate and respect everything you've ever done. So the little BS that happens with the administration, don't get frustrated and don't get pissed off at you, because it's just sometimes people make decisions that have no history, and people sometimes get spit out sideways. And I've heard tons of people I know feel, I'm ostracized, I'm mad. It's like, dude, that guy doesn't even know he doesn't even know who Dick Mattson is. He doesn't even know who people are that are, like, just a regular Joe's. So don't feel ostracized, man. You're still the man. Everyone still loves you, from the freaking softball team to the volleyball team, the basketball team, and the football team. They still love you. So just move on and put your maroon and gold on and stay proud.
Well, I'm going to be a little honest with you. I have snuck over two weekends this year to go, follow my softball gals. So
you should
and actually have done some work for them on some catcher's mitts, so that's one of my new ventures is repairing gloves. So yeah. All right, Durrell, I can get you out of here. Thanks a lot. Have a good day today, man. Have a good call.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yep. Appreciate it. Take care. See ya.
And again, that was Durrell Thompson, all-time leading rusher and one of the voices of Gopher football here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
JB is my name, and f***ing up motherfuckers is my game.
I am Negro, Black, African American,
Black.
Django, JB.
Damn, Dolomite.
Great God in heaven, you know.
JB,
our great Negro sex machine.